Welcome everyone to EngageCast, a freshly brewed podcast series by WebEngage. We bring you insights, information, and terrific conversation about user engagement and retention from some of the top marketers and entrepreneurs in the game today. In today's episode, we are in conversation with Gaurav Bhavnani, who heads retention and revenue at Licious. Licious is an online meet platform established in 2015. Available via their web and mobile app platform, Licious is one of the front runners in India's $30 billion meet market. Some numbers to put things in perspective. 6,000 daily orders, 3 lakh plus customers, over 90% repeat monthly business. Now that is some serious scale for a business that is operating in a largely unorganized, offline-dominated industry. In this episode, we will be talking about doing a deep dive into growth and retention strategies for consumer businesses, understanding user engagement on web and mobile, creating habit-forming digital experiences, maximizing the product value for consumers to ramp up brand loyalty, and differentiating your product marketing strategy. Let us find out more from Gaurav himself about Licious, their marketing strategy for growth, and what sets them apart from the competition. Hi, Gaurav. How are you?
Hey, hi, Priyam. I'm good. How are you?
I'm great. Apart from bad throat, but everything seems to be fine otherwise.
Yeah, even I have a bit of a bad throat, but yeah.
So Gaurav, first of all, let me thank you for agreeing to do this. This is one of the first podcasts from the WebEngage stable, and we are very excited to have you on board, talk about Licious, talk about retention marketing, talk about user engagement and everything else in between. Without further ado, Gaurav, I would want you to introduce yourself a little bit to our listeners.
Sure. So I'm Gaurav. I have been largely in the startup ecosystem all my career. Have been in it for about 7 years now. Have worked through different roles, different industries in a way. So started in services, then got into fintech, and then I am in a consumer brand now. And similarly, the professional journey, right? So started with in a way from ops to category to overall leading business, and then now primarily focused on marketing piece of it. And yeah, so currently solving retention and growth for Licious.
Awesome. Licious is a very interesting brand, Gaurav. I did a bit of reading about the brand myself, and it's fascinating. The first, I would say, online meat brand that I came into contact with was Licious. And before that, I was obviously purchasing all of my fresh meat, so to say, and fish requirements and all of the non-vegetarian requirements from the unorganized vendors, right? And it's a welcome addition to the industry, I would say. So help us understand the brand a little bit better.
So Licious, as you rightly mentioned, right? It's probably one of the few or the only brand in the fresh meat space. And where it has kind of come from is that both of founders, Abhay and Vivek, realized that it's about time that India eats the meat that it deserves. And that's where it started from. And eventually when we got into it, when they both of them got into it, we realized that the entire supply chain, not just the last mile or the front end bit of it, but the overall supply chain is in a way broken, right? India does not have great infrastructure in terms of cold chain. Consumer brands are not that old here, and there are still a couple of categories which are left where standardization has not come into place, and that promise of quality is not there. And the idea started from there. In fact, work through different stages where I think at one point in time there was the idea of being an aggregator as well. But once we got into realizing that we need to solve for a much larger problem, that's where the idea of Licious was born, where we said we'll solve the entire piece. It cannot be piecemeal in nature. And yeah, so now we operate in both. So fresh is one of the largest categories that we operate in. We also look at something which is very interesting, which is value-added products, right? So if you look at it today, we have a wide range of ready-to-cook products. We also have quite a bit of cold cuts. We also have different varieties of eggs. Now also getting into spreads and pickles. So that's the strategy going forward, that not just... So we are adding a lot of value in that sense, right? Because that also helps us differentiate overall from... So as you mentioned, that a lot of people were or are used to buying it from their local butchers.
Right.
Now we are different at the core product level, where you won't find these products elsewhere.
Right.
So yeah, that's the story. It's been about 4 years now. And yeah, we are among the biggest consumer brands out there in the startup space.
That's amazing. I was reading a statistic somewhere that Licious is obviously out for capturing the lion's share of a $30 billion meat market in India, which is largely...
Yeah.
And that's a mind-boggling number. It's a huge market, I'm sure. And I think the brand is really a step in the right direction. Of course, the quality meat aspect that you mentioned, that has always been a huge want, at least for non-vegetarians in India. So another really cool aspect about the brand that I recently came across was the brand video. I saw an ad on YouTube where... I think the brand whole story is, has been synthesized very beautifully. Where there is a guy who goes to buy fish from the fish market, and like, the reactions that he gets from people not very pleasant. And Licious is trying to change that. So I think it's a really cool way to position the brand. Most definitely, talking about quality meat products and something that you could do from your mobile phone. And so really cool. Now. We'll talk a little bit more about the insights about the brand's inception. So I wanted to get into this age-old question that every marketer, you know, struggles with at some point of time. That is acquisition versus retention. You guys being a new category, I would say, you guys must have struggled with that same question. And I'm sure you guys must be doing the balancing act right now as we speak. Whether to have an acquisition-heavy or a retention-heavy marketing strategy, what has worked out for you in your experience? What is important at which particular stage in time of a brand's journey? When does acquisition play an important role? When does retention play an important role? Whether a balance is required? And what really works out when it comes to sustainable long-term growth? Is it acquisition?
Sure. So I think you kind of put it perfectly there. So I think all companies at all stages kind of struggle with this question that should we take a hyper growth route on the acquisition piece, or should we continue basically building the retention part, right? So with Licious, I think there has been a conscious call. It also comes from the way the brand has been conceptualized and the inception where it came from, right? So because we wanted to solve the entire ecosystem or the entire quality piece, we always knew that unless we solve for the core product quality, we are not going to be able to, one, give the customers what we want, right? So what we always say is that we sell only what we eat ourselves.
Right.
So we won't sell anything which is subpar in any manner. And that actually feeds into the retention heavy strategy. So all the numbers that you would have heard of, it's something that we focused on since the beginning. Having said that, I think it's not a versus question. I don't think it's acquisition versus retention.
Awesome.
Because so what we say internally is that retention starts at acquisition.
Oh, wow.
So we need to look at, so we've been very clear about building a playbook city by city, right? So a lot of companies, even in my past, the experiences that I've had, there are two strategies, right? So if you you take the chance of either spreading yourself too thin by hypergrowth in terms of geographical expansion, we've taken the other route where we said that we'll build Bangalore fast. First and then expand into other cities gradually. And that's how we've done it. We focused on the product first, built Bangalore. And we've always been a retention oriented or retention heavy in terms of the strategy that we deploy. And not just from a marketing standpoint, I think we have done a fairly good job in terms of having that built as a culture. So it's not just my responsibility or the marketing team responsibility. everything from sourcing till final delivery is built around creating a delight of sorts, which leads to the customer being sticky overall.
Awesome.
The idea is once we have that piece sorted in place and something that we are very confident about, I think we've almost reached that stage where we are sure of what we want to do and how we want to scale it up. That's where you can double up on your acquisition. Because acquisition, once the product market fit is there, and once we know what exactly the consumer is looking for, and we've started addressing those needs, then acquisition becomes a relatively more sensible avenue to double up on, because that leads to the loop of hypergrowth from there, right? Because that's kind of feeding in. While retention is driving the overall engine or the wheel, the fuel is getting pumped by acquisition, right? So that's how we look at it.
Awesome. I think that was wonderfully put, Gaurav. The car analogy that you used, that was lovely.
Yeah.
So my understanding was probably something similar. I'm glad you clarified that. Obviously, you guys are trying to create a product that speaks for itself, so to say, right from first touch point, which is the website or the app, and then the actual product itself. So you guys are obviously handling the entire supply chain and everything that comes in the process. So I guess the strategy for you guys right now is to create something so amazing that you have a legion of fans who probably become evangelists in the future. And once you reach that stage, you guys try to focus on getting more people on board because you are confident of the actual product, right?
Exactly. So I think we are there now in a way. So we in a way built that in over the last couple of years that we've spent.
Sure.
Figuring that out, and now we are all set for the next leap of growth, right?
So, sure. So Gaurav, that's very fascinating, especially the fact that I see this sensibility about balancing acquisition and retention very clearly, about understanding where the revenue comes from and where the next phase of growth is going to come from. Was this insight always present when you guys were building the company right since inception, or was this something that was acquired or learned from other brands or businesses that you guys look up to, or was it something that you guys learned over a period of time?
So it'd be unfair to say that we knew it from the beginning, right? Everyone, each startup or each company goes through that cycle of learning.
Oh, sure.
And I think a fair bit of us have been through the 2014, 2015 journey of crazy amount of funding and the wrong metrics being followed and all of that, right? So I think we realized it over a period of time, and it's also from the peer. I think the ecosystem has also developed a bit where it's not just about GMV anymore, or it's not just about the number or top line that you're driving. It's also about the overall metrics that we look at, right? So I think the first 2 to 3 quarters is what we took to realize. Again, it's also, I think, a trade-off or a balancing act between finding the core TG that you're going after.
Sure.
And the problem that you're trying to solve.
Sure.
That's there. It becomes slightly more clear as to what are the consumers that we are going after, and which give us the opportunity to serve their needs well and at the same time build enough value for the business.
Awesome.
Once we have that clarity is when we started looking at where are we getting consumers from, not just in terms of geography, in terms of channels, in terms of sources, and from there on, we've stuck with it. So we've not ever deviated from it in a way, saying that if you're not able to build stickiness for some geography or for some acquisition source, we try to solve for it for sure, because all consumers are important. But if you've not been able to, if there is a mismatch there, then we've stuck to what we believe in and we solve that well, right? That eventually leads to a better LTV overall. Mm-hmm. And today, I think LTV to CAC is what kind of defines what a sustainable business is. And now we are fairly sorted on that front.
Awesome. Awesome. So one very fascinating thing came into my head right now. I was just wondering, you talked about solving for geographies as you grow, right? And you obviously have the numbers that suggest what kind of performance the brand is doing in a particular geography. Let's say a hypothetical example of a completely new region where you guys have been present in for, like, say 6 months or something, for a fairly long period of time, but you don't really see the kind of traction that you had expected. Now, is there some kind of an SOP, standard operating procedure of sorts, that you guys kind of apply, which is like a first aid process to kind of smoothen out all of the curbs and make sure that, you know, the train is going full speed ahead and you guys, you know, sort out the kinks?
Sure. Yeah. So there is, while I would not necessarily call it a first aid process, what we've now arrived at is, after being through the first two or three cities, now we operate in about six cities overall. If you, an analogy in a way, where it's more like a rocket ship, right? You need to have, give it the first 10, 20 or 30 seconds to build up that pace. And what we've kind of overall figured out is that there is a certain amount of time and effort that needs to be put in the first couple of months, which get the ball rolling in a way. And that learning for us has come from Bangalore and Hyderabad, and then we applied it in the other cities that we got into, like NCR, Bombay and Pune now, and Chandigarh. So I think it's more about giving, while each of the markets are different, right? So we've also over the period identified that different cultural mixes, different demographic mixes have different needs, and the way they consume the product, because it's food at the end of the day for us, right? So way you use it could be very different. It's more like the way dialects change in India, that's how food behaviors also change. So while that bit is there, there is a standard operating procedure now around how much time should we give the market and how much spends are going to go in and what channels do we focus on initially versus once the market has matured slightly.
Awesome.
So that understanding is there.
Brilliant. I'm sure the insights that you guys have must be fascinating. One more question, it's a connected question, just out of curiosity. What is your TG right now? I'm sure there must be quite a few profiles that you are catering to right now. But that one particular portrait that you would paint for the typical Licious consumer, who is that person?
So a broader portrait, while we have, as you mentioned, right, there are quite a few personas that we look at, an age group of between 25 and 45. It's skewed towards women. But it's, yeah, so it's slightly skewed towards women, but overall, it's not that heavy. So it's not like a 4:1 kind of a ratio. But what we've realized over a period of time, that even in modern households, the women of the house, if not is placing the order, has a very high influence on what is going to come in, right? So it is not, I mean, that bit is still there. So that's also an understanding that we've kind of arrived at over a period of time.
Sure.
So yeah, I think a couple of things like this have helped us stamp that TG well. So as I said, right, so 25 to 45 age group, we are now identified that women form a larger share of it. Mm-hmm. A large part of our audience, while we don't kind of, it's not that strict in the sense, but a large part of the audience that we look at are working households, when we say that both the partners could be working.
Sure.
And we are right now skewed slightly towards a family in a way. Not just a family, but could be a working couple as well, right?
Yeah.
So that's a broader demographic. And that can be called our core, right? The core TG is that. And eventually what we are looking at is building the entire range, right? So if you look at, there are further bifurcations in what this core TG needs, right? There are different personas. So there are folks who are looking for convenience. There are folks who want to. So if you look at it, this core TG for us loves to cook as well. Even if they are not able to find time during the week, they would love to cook over the weekend. So now we are orienting ourselves, and we have products in place which cater to both these needs. So you could be a regular. Yeah. So that's the idea, and that's the innovation that we are bringing on the table as well.
Awesome.
And at the same time, that has also in a way helped us expand our TG slightly. So because these days there is that younger demographic of people between 20 and 25, probably in their first jobs, who explore new hobbies and who are getting into cooking very recently. And awesome. That's also, that's not a big enough use case for us today, but that's a use case that we are solving at the moment.
For sure. I'm a part of that that target group. Let me tell you that.
Yeah.
I would find it a nightmare to go to a shop and probably find fresh produce for fresh meat for myself. I think dishes is a huge time saver and it's really convenient. Definitely makes sense. Just following up on the point that you mentioned, where you guys want to go deeper. So my understanding is that would you want to go deeper vertically, or the expansion is going to be horizontal for this particular TG right now?
So just checking on it, you're talking about the core TG?
Yeah, the core TG that you mentioned, where right now you are specifically trying to solve a particular problem of providing good quality meat products. But once you think about expanding, what does your data suggest right now? Whether I need to expand horizontally, probably add more products to it, or do I go in deeper into this one particular product that he likes and give him more variants? What is the thought process over there?
So, interesting. We are going vertically deeper at this point. The idea is, so because, again, right, so we operate in a category where the unorganized competition is quite huge, and we need in that sense. And over the period, what we've realized is that our core TG is seeking out for such options as well. So now we are looking at going vertical in the fresh category itself, where I mentioned earlier that there are already, so we have about 6 to 8 products, which are specific cuts which you would not find on other platforms, offline or online. And the idea is to build that further,
right,
where not just addressing the existing use case, at the same time, we are also creating use cases. Or there are latent use cases that you probably aren't introduced or aware of yet.
Sure.
So the idea is to bring that up and solve for it and be the only destination in the market that would probably serve it better.
Super. Cool. So Gaurav, there was this one really amazing statistic that I came across about Licious, and it talks about having a 90% repeat purchase rate at any given point of time. I guess I'm not sure about the timeline, but that statistic is phenomenal and it sounds like a marketer's dream. Tell us a little bit more about that. How did that happen, and what are you guys doing right now that is so special to get this kind of retention rate, I would say?
So as I mentioned, right, so the entire brand in a way is focused towards solving just a couple of things, if not one, and solving it really well.
Sure.
So the entire thing about being focused on the core TG that you operate with and addressing their needs well is something that's led to it. Apart from, of course, we've used a lot of technology to understand their behavior on the platform, off the platform.
Right.
How do they go about solving the ease of purchase as well? And that's where we've optimized on it, and that's helped us get the flywheel rolling. But I think at core, we've also hit the hit a home run in terms of getting the product and the TG right. That's where we get our month-on-month 90% repeat revenue rate, right? So that's something I think which Licious has solved for in a special way, getting the product market fit right, and then making it exceptionally easy for you to get the product when you want it, and in the exact form, and just make it so convenient for the user that it's difficult to go elsewhere.
Sure.
And we are further doubling up on it by newer product interventions in terms of tech product, right? So if I can give you an example, the category that we operate in, the natural course of action in terms of the products that you order is, after a certain set of data is collected, is fairly predictable.
Okay.
Where it could be based on where you come from, where which age group you belong to, your, because it's also not a finished product, right? It's something that goes into your meal. Users have a strong affinity towards categories and certain cuts, certain products that they buy.
Sure.
And the idea going forward is to make it almost a zero click process. So to get to the platform and come to buy, that's something that we are focusing on now.
Right.
And so far, in fueled with the product in terms of the physical product that we sell, and having enough and more understanding about when do the users want it. So context has also played a very big part for us.
Awesome.
Understanding that we've developed over the period, that maybe you start with being a, where we just form or get into your consideration set as a brand.
Mm-hmm.
From how do we bring you to be as a loyal consumer is
sure.
a journey that we've had. So now there is a process to it where we know what products could be your next products to buy and
yeah.
what's a typical frequency that you should be operating at.
Right.
In terms of frequency of purchase. So
right.
I think all these variables now get into it. And that's something that's helping us build
mm-hmm.
this going forward.
Awesome. Incidentally, I was reading about Licious and I came across the famed recommendation engine that Licious has, where you guys have been able to, I'd say, forecast the demand for products. It has helped you guys reduce the wastage, I would say, and also probably issues of overstocking and everything else. They have also gone down, which is, I think, phenomenal. A lot of data points are consumed and the engine basically gets smarter with each data point that is introduced. I wanted to find out whether something similar is happening about user engagement. You mentioned context being very important. And
yeah.
It's no surprise that you know, context is really, really big right now, at least for consumer businesses. How important has context been with respect to user engagement on Licious? And also, what are the platforms or other, what are the channels that are employed right now at Licious to engage with a user?
So if we talk about the channels first, right? So these typically we heavily rely on our own platforms. So
sure.
Push notifications is one of the key channels that we use.
Awesome.
Because we are a high frequency and high engagement use case,
right.
By the virtue of the category, right? So
right.
that's a benefit that we have. Mm. And that's why we are quite heavily indexed on push notifications.
Mm.
At the same time, so we try and follow a right mix between how I look at it is how intrusive the channel is. Try and follow a right mix between the other channels which are in social. In terms of if we come to context now, the channel mix slightly plays a very important role there because
right.
certain channels, so for example, your push notifications and paid social helps mm-hmm. us drive a lot of relevant engagement. To give you an example, right now we are working on something which is about World Cup. And these are the two primary channels that we are kind of leveraging.
Sure.
Because paid social gives you enough reach outside of your current active base as well. And push notifications is something that we use heavily. One, it's extremely cost efficient.
Mm-hmm.
And two, it gives you a direct and best response rate with your active base. So these are the two channels that we kind of heavily rely on, followed on by SMSs and email.
Awesome. Basic transactional messages, I would say SMS and email, I'm sure they are active right now. But but how effective has the push channel been with respect to repeat purchases? And when you answer that, do share any interesting statistics or any interesting campaigns that you guys run to get the user to transact again and again and again on the platform.
So interestingly, right? So push is one of the most efficient channels for us. And while we were talking about context earlier,
right.
So We've seen a 4x to 5x growth in terms of click-throughs and in terms of conversions just by building context in the communication, right?
Amazing.
So how we look at it is typically do testing between copy content and context in a way. So there is something which we try and achieve. It's not always possible,
sure.
but I've kind of experimented by doing similar stuff without having a relevant context to it. Something, a use case which is very frequent is we look at how frequently do you come to a category and how frequently do you buy from that. And
right.
that's a context that we've built in, that we know how many times do you typically look at something before you make a decision.
Right.
And that's where we've built in the nudge now. And that has helped us. So we were also doing certain campaigns which were intelligence built in.
Mm-hmm.
And we've seen about a 4x growth there in terms right. of click-throughs and conversions.
Right.
right? and click-through largely has been derived because of the context we can face.
Super, super. So data is the real champion, I would say, letting you get really amazing user behavior. Fantastic. One more question that comes into my mind. There's a lot that is being said right now about habit-forming products, especially for consumer-facing businesses and digital apps. And everyone's talking about having that habit-forming element. And like you mentioned, the product meat is obviously a food product and it's a high consumption category. But then there are also competitors in the market. It would be the perfect situation if you guys were a proper monopoly operating in the country, but sadly that is not true. I'm sure you guys have competition as well. I'm sure there are certain habit forming elements in the product built in, and there must be a strategy around creating a habit forming product, whether it is the user experience or the product or everything else, so that you guys are able to stay ahead of the curve. Tell us a little bit about that.
So there are two pieces to it, right? So one, I think we briefly spoke about earlier. So again, one, to address it, right? Yes, that's the key thing, right? Each brand wants to solve for the habit formation bit. We've gone about it, we've taken two routes, right? One is the tech route and one is the actual physical product route.
Awesome.
On the actual product, as I said, so we've worked on and we've launched a couple of products which are more or less exclusive to Licious, those have shown us good results in terms of driving higher stickiness in our consumers. On the product side, on the tech side of it, we continuously work on creating a loop, right? So right now the entire data is being structured in a way, or what we are trying to do is preempt consumer purchases.
Sure.
And kind of reduce that cycle further, because what we've realized is that a large part of audience is still online plus offline, which means that there is a share of revenue that's going to other platforms or the offline platform largely, which we are missing out on. So the idea is to have that persona in place, so have a baseline persona, which kind of gives us the intelligence and gives us the data points around when are consumers likely to go and buy offline, and build communication around them to move them online gradually.
Brilliant.
So this is the insight of the strategy that we started with, and that's how we've also now gotten into, we've launched our first offline store as well, because we know that that's an open area that we need to get into. There's no getting away from it.
Sure.
So right now the idea is to, one, reduce the purchase cycle, because we know that for a large part of the audience, we might, while we are a preferred and a loved brand, just because of inertia or because of that convenience factor not being there for certain use cases, there is a share of revenue that might be going offline or to other platforms. That's the easier part of the piece to grab initially. And then it's going to be fueled by having exclusive products, exclusive launches, getting into content strategy maybe. And that's what's going to eventually help us be the destination for meat. Right?
Amazing, amazing. The online to offline aspect is really cool. And I think a lot of startups have done that. I was very happy to see a couple of spectacle brands, I think Lenskart, when I saw their offline stores, it just made sense. And I'm sure it's the same for you guys as well. I would love to feel the product and check some new variants out. Definitely.
Exactly.
Makes a lot of sense. Amazing.
So, I mean, it's key to the category, right? Over 90%. Close to 90% of the market share is still offline.
Right.
And although we'll grow at a rate online, offline is still going to be a large chunk of it.
Oh, absolutely.
And not want to be miss that piece. And what we've also realized over a period that there is with RTG and with Indian consumers, there is a touch and feel aspect to it. And we wanted to bridge that gap of moving on from their preferred place of purchase today.
Sure.
To online. So this also acts as a bridge there.
Sure. So it's what, how I see it is probably another level of building the brand and what it stands for. It's a very tangible element of the brand, and
yes.
Definitely helps you get these offline consumers to the offline platform, I'm sure. Fantastic, Gaurav. So Mumbai, Pune are new areas that the brand has expanded in. Like you mentioned, you guys are present in 6 cities now. How has the experience been for you personally working in the growth department? A new city is obviously going to be very different from the old one, right? And all the calculations, permutations, combinations go out of the window. Everything has to be done up again. How has the expansion fared? And is it easy? Is it hard? How do you conquer these new geographies?
So a lot of groundwork goes into it. One, as I mentioned earlier as well, right? So food habits are like dialects in India, where consumption patterns change a lot. So Mumbai and Pune have been key markets in terms of key markets that we were eyeing for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And so whenever we launch a market, a lot of research goes into understanding the consumer behavior there. Because I think all of us come with a certain set of experience, and that as a virtue of that, slight bit of bias as to how different consumers behave. The idea is to correct that early on and get to know the consumer closely. So there are a lot of consumer districts that we do to understand what are the key categories to operate in that geography. What are the key products? Because certain categories that we operate in, like fish and seafood or ready to cook, right? The products, and for example, for ready to cook, the spice levels, the texture, the taste, all of it has to be suited to the local needs. So the entire exercise goes into building that. And whenever we launch a new city, it's we solve for the nuances in the product as well. And that's how we go about it. From the growth bit, right? So we've been very particular about the way I spoke about earlier, that we focused on building one city first and then gradually taking the playbook to other cities.
Right.
We take a higher approach while getting deeper into a city as well. So we typically would not go all out in a city like Mumbai, where it's a huge expanse, right? If you compare it to an org, it is more or less like a nation in itself. So we would pick key, so the way we have our core TGs, we have our core geographies also within the city. We would start with that and then build that understanding of how the behavior, specifically in terms of repeat behavior, how is it for that city, and then take it from there. So we fine tune for the first month or two and then scale it from there. And even there, the way a Mumbai behaves versus the way a Pune behaves is very different, right? Because the demographics are, and not entirely, but there's a significant difference there. So Pune probably has a younger audience, which has, the function of, or the coefficient that you get in terms of addressing convenience for them, the outcome out of that is much higher compared to a Bombay, where almost everyone has solved for convenience, right? So even you cannot largely compete on convenience in Mumbai. The product has to speak for it, and it has to solve for the local needs. That's how we've approached it in all the cities that we've launched, right?
Nice. So I think very well put, Gaurav. What I understood from that is the first step is to personalize the product as per the geography, and then go about personalizing the experience basis data. So I think that's a sound strategy. I'm sure that is something that has to work. I mean, there's no two ways around it. Another question. Well, WebEngage being a marketing automation company, it is hard to escape this. What role does marketing automation play in your marketing strategy right now, being in growth? you are obviously understanding user behavior very closely, and the engagement and the communication that goes out to these consumers, that is something which is critical to the brand's development. So has marketing automation helped you in taking the brand to newer heights when it comes to engaging with them, when it comes to creating a unique experience by virtue of personalizing content?
Oh, definitely, right? So data and automation is the centerpiece.
Right.
And that's where marketing automation also comes in, right? So when we talk about a large part of it is capturing the data in the right way. But even if you've done that well, to milk it or to basically drive value out of it comes from addressing consumer, not concerns, but use cases at a one-to-one level, right? So, right, that kind of personalization, in size of one in a way, I think automation is the only way to do that. And there, it has helped us tremendously, right? So, all the use cases, I think we missed a couple of them, but any which way, so wherever we've deployed it, we've definitely seen a multifold improvement in terms of engagement rates.
Awesome.
Even in smaller use cases, which have been there for a long time, right? So all your cart drop-offs, all your category drop-offs, where consumers are not moving ahead in the journey that you want them to, which effectively cannot be solved without automation.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen improvements to the tune of 25-30% in terms of conversions. So it becomes a centerpiece going forward, where the amount of data also that we capture at a user level is growing multifold over the period. Now with the online and offline piece also coming in, I think it'll play a more vital role going forward. Mm-hmm. Right?
Awesome. So the offline consumer aspect you mentioned, literally opening up a Licious brand outlet for these guys, right? Largely, the market is still unorganized, and in the regions that you are present in, I'm sure people have grown accustomed to their regular sources or regular channels of procuring meat products. Apart from opening up brick and mortar stores, which I'm sure is an expensive way to probably capture this market, what other avenues are you exploring to get these people onto your platform?
So, the way we look at the brand is that we are an FMCG brand in a way, right? And we happen to be digitally native, right?
Right.
Where our primary source of distribution so far has been online.
Right.
We've never been averse to going offline. And also what we've developed an understanding over a period is that there has to be a bridge. You cannot expect the entire audience to move directly from an experience which is going to their butcher or going to wherever they buy their meat from today, directly to a more evolved experience of buying directly online and getting it home delivered. So the idea is to get to all the possible touch points offline, and that's what we are exploring at this stage, where we started with a exclusive outlet.
Sure.
In Gurdwara, the idea is to, so that's a key step for us, right? So the category that we operate in, the metrics also justify that a store can in itself be self-sustainable. So it's not going to act just as a
center.
Yeah. So that's not the idea there. The idea is that exclusive outlets will work eventually, and we are also parallelly looking at other channels, which would mean that today we could be present in your modern trade outlets with a different range of products or with the same range of products. So that's where our value-added categories also come into picture, which have a higher shelf life. So there are different pros and cons to both, right? Perishable products, we have to solve for shelf life as well.
Right.
When we go offline, when we have the entire supply chain in-house, it is relatively easier. So that bit, that's the challenge that we have to solve before we kind of go all out offline.
Sure.
We have a category, or we are working on categories which have a higher shelf life and which could be present in these avenues. So that's the idea going forward.
Lovely.
And that kind of solves for I think every marketer's problem, right? That you have to be at the touch points that your consumer is present at. That's something that we are trying to solve from that.
Yeah, digital is sorted for you guys. Oh, that's pretty much obvious. So this is the, I guess, the next natural extension, definitely. So Gaurav, one question that all of us struggle with. We obviously work with a lot of B2C brands, and they always talk about loyalty, right? There is no real loyalty when you talk about it today because the competition is extreme and the consumers have become really demanding, right?
Yeah.
Like you said, we have to be present where the consumers are. And how is Licious focusing on this problem right now, which is to solve for brand loyalty? CLTV, I'm sure, is a huge metric for you. And that is what determines the success of the product. And it's linked to your core strategy of solving for the product and getting a loyal brand of consumers and then going acquisition heavy, right? So is there something that is tied into the core strategy of Licious to extract the max CLTV, so, and you know, get the most loyal set of consumers right now, apart from the product? Yes, the product is definitely the most important, but the digital touch point, the experience itself, how are you shaping it, how are you designing it to really guarantee brand loyalty?
So the way we look at it, right, so what I mentioned earlier is that how we look at it is retention starts at acquisition.
Right.
So what we try and do is we've identified certain products and certain categories which are more attuned to what the consumers are looking for. So over a period of time, we've shaped our consumer journey in a way that we try and get most consumers from the categories and the products that help us drive that. That is one part of it. Mm-hmm. Second, what we are trying to do is on the platform, we are working towards reducing the number of steps that you need to do to make a purchase. So how we look at it is there is a core set of products which contribute to a significant amount of volume in terms of, when I say significant, it's not exactly the 80-20 rule, but about half of the volume in terms of consumers coming in. We are trying to solve for that and double up on that. Because that's what we've seen, that's what data suggests, that that's where the brand solves for the maximum in terms of consumer expectations. That's eventually helped us drive LTV from those consumers. And then eventually, once that bit is sorted, that's where then we start working on the retention. In fact, parallelly, we start working on getting those consumers exposed to the other products and categories that we operate in. And there is a journey there where we've bucketed products in terms of volume drivers, and then what's the next step that the consumer should be looking at. And that's where the recommendation engine and the communication automation piece also comes in.
Right.
So we've bucketed products and we've driven those journeys in a way where now there is a step-by-step process which we would want consumers to go through to have one that also helps us drive visibility of our entire range.
Mm-hmm.
And gradually make the consumer used to different products and categories that we operate in, rather than giving them a shock in a way where they directly get exposed to a category that they've never had before or tried. Mm-hmm. To give a very simple use case in that sense, right? So if you are a fish and seafood consumer, or let's say if you are a fresh fish and you've not had a seawater fish earlier, that's a taste that you might not be used to.
Sure.
Right? So I need to identify that from data and make sure that I land you on the right products and I make you purchase the right products.
Right.
Because even after being the products as per specs, and the quality being right, if that's a taste or that's a product that you're not used to, there is a huge expectation mismatch, which cannot be solved for later on. So that's something that we figured out that works for this category. And now the entire product and marketing communication piece is kind of geared to solve or address that.
Right. So That's awesome. That's perfect. Actually, that's in my head, it's sort of like a customer onboarding journey of sorts, I'd say, where he takes a desirable route and is not peppered with wrong information. I think there's a lot of intelligent data and automation associated with that. I'm sure that is happening in the back end. You guys making sure that the journey is delightful for the consumer. Definitely.
Yeah.
So one last question, Gaurav. I think we have taken quite a lot of your time, and you have been really forthcoming, really amazing with all of the answers. But I think this is something which is obviously a little futuristic. I'd say different things happening for Licious at this point of time, I'm sure. But what are the growth avenues for the brand for the next 5 years? What are the areas from where the maximum amount of growth is going to come from? Is it geographical expansion? Is it a new product, new category, new TG, new experience, new channel? Can be anything.
So I think at this stage, we are looking at two key things. While geographical expansion is going to happen because we are a national brand and we would want to drive footprint.
Sure.
I think two things are key. One, which I covered earlier as well, which is drive core product differentiation, because that's going to create a moat for us. It has already, but we want to make that a strong wall to bridge and be very strong, to have a very strong foothold there. So we are looking at driving a lot of product innovation in a way where Licious differentiates itself far and beyond compared to all other options around. That is one. And second, offline, right? So we are betting on offline at this stage. And as I mentioned earlier, large part of the overall market, close to 91-92%, is still offline, right? So we need to get to cracking that market as fast as possible. And so these are the two big growth levers. And that's how we are strategically aligned to get into it. Now, there are further trails from there. But yeah, if I have to categorize the top two, these two would make it.
Super. Gaurav, I think you have gone through a lot of questions. You have answered them sufficiently. Thank you very much for that. There is one last segment that we have. It's sort of like a rapid fire kind of a section that we have. We're going to ask you some questions. No uncomfortable questions, definitely. So we'll sort it on that part. But some quick questions that we would want you to answer quickly, whenever you're ready.
Yeah, we can shoot. Yeah.
Awesome. So first one, straight off the bat, what is the number one USP of Licious that separates itself from its competitors?
Consumer centricity, I think. Yeah.
Awesome. You've worked for different industries. You mentioned fintech, you mentioned retail. According to you, what is the fastest growing industry in India right now?
While I think all the three that I've worked in have been quite big, I think fintech at this stage, in the next 4 to 5 years, is going to be the fastest growing among the three, just because the penetration is very, very low and there's a lot of innovation and consolidation that's bound to happen. So yeah, I think fintech.
Definitely. That was my answer as well. So if you want a marketing professional, who would you be?
I'd start something.
Oh, all right. So yeah. Entrepreneur at heart. Yeah. I see. Nice.
Yeah.
If you're not working, then what can I find you doing? One passion that you're really invested in?
Oh, I either read or shoot. So shoot as in I either take photographs or I read. Yeah.
Nice. Thanks for clarifying that. Nice. I share the same passion. Lovely to know that.
Oh, you're on it as well. Yeah.
Nice. All right. So your dream job?
Again, be an entrepreneur. I would not. I don't think that'd be a dream job as such.
All right. Fair. A life quote that you stand by, really believe in?
It wouldn't be a life quote as such, but yeah, first principle thinking.
Super.
Yeah.
Definitely. Any idols that you really follow and you really kind of idolize professionally, sports, anything?
So, if we look at There are a couple in the Indian ecosystem. There are a couple in the Silicon Valley. So I think Reid Hoffman is one.
Sure.
Ryan Chesky is another from Silicon Valley.
Nice.
And I think in the Indian ecosystem, I think the entire range of the first generation entrepreneurs that we've seen in the last 7-8 years, up to them have been phenomenal. So yeah, Kunal Shah is one of them. I think there are quite a few actually. So yeah, in the ecosystem, I think I can say Kunal Shah is one of
super. Super. All right, Gaurav, thank you so much for answering all of those questions with so much cadence. And thank you so much for being a part of this podcast. I think you were really
pleasure. Wonderful. Thank you for having me.
Pleasure is all ours. I think the session was really fantastic. And we got to learn a lot about the business. We got to learn a lot about the brand, the way Licious is attempting user engagement and retention with a completely unknown kind of a category, I would say, in the digital space. I think it's fascinating, and all the very best to the brand and to you as well.
Thank you.
Awesome.
Thank you so much for listening. That's all we have in this episode. If you like the podcast or have any questions, please leave a comment in the section below. We'll try our best to answer them. Also, please feel free to let us know if you want us to cover certain topics related to retention in our podcast. We would love to do that for you. Needless to say, you can always recommend your favorite MarTech idols that you want to listen to on our podcast. We will try our best to get them on air. Once again, thank you so much. Take care and keep up the good work. You were listening to Priyam Jha from WebEngage in close conversation with Gaurav Bhavnani from Licious.